Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis. Have you ever taken out a payday loan? We're interested today in how that's worked out for you. It didn't work out terribly well for one of our guests today, who says it launched a repayment cycle so onerous, she's gone to work to try to get more safeguards in the system to protect people. Attorney General Mark Herring is amping up the AG's office to deal with consumer protection issues like predatory lending and deceptive business practice. Let us hear your story after this news from NPR. Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. It's great to be with you today. We're talking about predatory lending in the first part of our program today. And then a little bit later, we'll talk with George Lutz. He's the founder and executive director of Honor and Remember, which is an organization that essentially continues to recognize the families of military members who fall in the line of duty. They have a big event coming up this Sunday. He'll join us to preview the 7th annual Gold Star Family Evening. First, though, as we said, a look at payday lending, and we want to hear what your experience with payday lending has been. We're at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. This issue of payday loans, which car title loans, which some describe as predatory lending, depending on the terms of those loans, is something that has gotten the attention of state level and at the federal level. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has been taking a look at these issues and proposing some guidelines around that. There is some question about the Bureau's future in a Trump administration. This was one that was started about 5 years ago and was spearheaded by Elizabeth Warren. So we'll talk about that in the course of the program. We'll also consider the increase in staffing and the reorganization of the Attorney General's office, which seeks to bring more focus on this issue of consumer protection from abusive and illegal business practices. Our numbers are 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. We're glad to have Deborah Grant with us today. She's the vice chair of Virginia Organizing. Nice to have you with us, Ms. Grant. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Kathy.
So when we were talking about this issue of payday loans, you have your own story to tell about that, which essentially inspired you to get involved with Virginia Organizing.
Yes, ma'am. I had got a payday loan because of a need for my children to help them out of a situation. And I began, I guess it began to spiral, because after I helped my daughter with her payday loan to get out of her payday loan.
Oh, so your daughter had one as well.
My daughter had one first. And then we found that it was kind of, I guess it was easy because she paid it back. But then she got another one and she couldn't quite get out of that one, so I had to help her with that.
And so that's why you took the payday loan.
So that's why I took the payday
loan. And what kind of work do you do?
I am disabled. I'm retired.
I see. So when we say payday loan in this case, you didn't have a payday. I mean, if that makes sense. You were the sources that would have gone to repay this loan were coming out of whatever benefits you're receiving as a disabled person. Is that correct?
Ma'am. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
So, so you took out the loan to help your daughter out, and then what happened?
And she was able to pay it back. And then the first one and then the second one, they were getting ready to put it in collection or to cash the check in, because you have to do a predated check. And so she didn't want that to happen. So that's the reason why I got the payday loan, so I can pay it off for her. And then I was able to go ahead on and do that. And then I guess I just got into the cycle of it. And then I started paying off my payday loan. I got one to cover another one to cover another one to cover another one, because at first it was very easy. They weren't really, you know, I guess, saying that you couldn't have too many at one time. So And then my son was in a situation. He's in the National Guard, and the National Guard is not quite military as the military is. And he got a car title loan. And it just began to go
down. We should say, though, that National Guard people perform many, many military services. It just is not in the same sort of vein as full-time military.
Right. It's full-time military. So when he's not in the National Guard active duty, he has to go back to civilian.
Got it.
And it just, he wasn't able to pay the loan. And then he got called up to go to Kuwait. And he had a car title loan, and he wasn't able to pay that. So they began to take the car away from him. But the car was broken down anyway. So I was able to call one of the board boards that I'm on with Virginia Poverty Law Center. And Dana Wiggins was able to help me to help him to get his car back. So, but then, you know, he was able to get out of that payday loan because at that time, then the military wasn't able, didn't want the military people to go to get payday loans. They couldn't do that.
Right. So, they've been for a long time saying, please don't do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and then it was mandatory. And by him being active duty, he couldn't go back in there to do it. So I just went back in and I got another payday loan to help him to get, you know, situated and get straightened out and everything. But finally, after many years, because it was many years of us keep going through that cycle, paying it off, and then going back in there and rebarring, and then, I mean, you know, it just became a cycle. And I think we paid millions. I feel like we paid almost millions of dollars in trying to pay those loans off. But eventually, I was able to pay mine off, and it's just a debt trap.
And many more times of the loan that you received.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, the Pew Research Center says that that this is a particular issue that hurts women, most especially low-income women and single mothers. Single mothers, especially women of color, more vulnerable to predatory lending than either married mothers or men. Their research shows that African Americans are 105% more likely to take out a payday loan than other races and ethnicities. And some believe there's real targeting underway there.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I live in an area where there were at one time 7 or 8 payday loans, car title loans on one block on Newtown Road, and it wasn't a viable grocery store. It was only one bank. So, you know, people had to do what they had to do in situations that they, you know, being able to pay their rent or pay their light bill or feed their children or whatever, and they just went in and we did what we had to do.
So you said the first one was fairly easy to get, mm-hmm. and maybe the second one's fairly easy to get. Mm-hmm. What happens after that third or fourth? Because some of the stories that we've heard suggest that the interest rates are quite high, and then if you don't pay it back, then you really get into a difficulty.
You get into a difficulty because what they do is they take the predated check that you wrote, that you left, and they put it into the bank. And if the bank...
This is a predated check on your payroll that's coming.
Yes, yeah. Yes, on my retirement money. And then they, you know, they send it to the bank, and you know you don't have any money in the bank, and it comes up insufficient fund, and then you're charged a whole lot of fees and everything like that. And then their judgments that are taken out on you because you couldn't pay off the payday loan. So that's what happened to me a couple of times.
We're at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. We want to hear from you today on your own story with regard to to payday loans, car title loans, wondering if you have had to have one from time to time and how that experience worked out for you. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers where you can join us today. There is a Supreme Court case before the court right now with regard to the city of Miami that says essentially in its view that predatory lending created a circumstance where so many people were lent money who should not have been lent money, that when the housing market fell apart in 2007, it created a hardship for the city of Miami because of foreclosures. So we'll get the status of that in just a few moments as well. There are some cases being brought at the state level as well. So this experience, you're all paid up now, I'm guessing.
Yes, ma'am.
This experience really inspired you to get involved with Virginia Organizing, which is an organization that speaks for people in poverty, essentially, and the working poor.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And I also volunteer with the IAB, which is the Interfaith Alliance of Virginia Beach, which we work with, volunteer with Virginia, with social services. Uh-huh. And it, we work on anti-predatory lending, you know, work, and we started a program which is called Bank On. And Bank On is a class. It's classes that you go to, and for 10 months, and then you meet with a free coach, and you talk over. You learn about how to do your finances.
Fix things
all
up, right?
Yeah. How to get everything straightened out.
This is Bank On is the name of that program. They have a matched savings incentive program where essentially you can put money in a savings account, and then grants that have been, you know, money that's collected through the community, through that, they'll match that deposit, which essentially doubles your savings.
Yes.
And the idea here is that creates a sort of a cushion for folks to use instead of payday lending loans in an emergency. And so that's Bank On. We'll get to the website for that before the end of the broadcast. Let's go to Chris on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Not just payday loans in general or the title loans, but lending in general seems to be predatory in a certain way toward, if you have bad credit to start with, you have to pay more money. Mm. It just doesn't seem to be set up. If you miss a payment, your charge card goes up to 19% if you're late. It just seems to be the whole system is set up to not help you at all to pay back, not just the lending of payday loans, but big banks as well.
Chris, have you had your own experience around this?
No, I haven't. Yeah. I've been fortunate. So I feel bad for people who don't have it like I have got it.
Yeah.
So I go in with the best score you can have, and I get the best loan. People who don't have it like that, they seem to be behind the eight ball to start with, and it's never said up to help them get from behind.
Sure. Starting behind and then getting further behind. Chris, I thank you for the call. The point Chris is making is an important one, and it is something that you could begin to address if you find yourself in that situation at Bank On Hampton Roads. BankOnHR.org is the name of the website. They're signing folks up right now for January classes. They have coaches available, a resource guide, and they'll tell you everything you need to know about building a fresh financial start month by month. You attend one class a month, meet with your financial coach, build towards your financial goals, raising your credit score, and that credit score, of course, all important, as Chris describes, because the better your credit score, the better your rates are going to be. The lower your credit score, the lower your rates are, or the higher your rates are going to be. I think I mixed that up, but you know what I mean. Jeff's on the line from Williamsburg. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I do not have a comment directly on the payday loan, more on the loan industry. Some years ago, many years ago, I needed to buy a piece of equipment to open up a business, and really had no down payment. So I went to what was then a very popular loan organization. I borrowed at an interest rate, which is probably reasonable now. I borrowed at a rate of 29%.
Wow.
And yeah, but I also had confidence that I could pay it back soon. So after I think I had borrowed it for 7 or 8 months. After 2 months, I went in to pay it off.
Uh-huh.
The counter help did not want me to pay it off.
Tell us about that.
Well, it sort of developed into a polite argument. I was trying to pay it off, and they quite frankly refused to take it. And so their manager, who was sitting in the back of the office, overheard the discussion and came forward and asked what the problem was. And I said, I'm trying to pay off my loan. She looked at some paperwork and she said, well, sir, we really don't want you to pay off your loan. We'd like to lend you some more money. And I thought that was just amazing. I said, 29%? I'll bet you would. but I think this is indicative of how the loan industry views us. That they are, I mean, they're a business. They're allowed to make money.
Sure.
But that rearranged my thought process on loans.
So that's really interesting, Jeff, and I thank you for the call, because I think a lot of us would say, might say, well, you know, this worked out well. I was able to pay this off. Let's get the next one. And then you don't know what's going to happen. And it sounds like that's a bit of what happened to you, Deborah Grant. The first one you took care of, and then you sort of got into this cycle. Jeff, thank you for the call. I really appreciate that. Steve's on the line from Smithfield. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for taking the call. Good program as usual. I'm a cynic, and the cynic in me says that if these businesses were run by swarthy men with greasy hair and gold chains around their necks, and their names ended in vowels, they'd be called loan sharks and be outlawed. But since they're not, and our state legislators aren't opposed to taking political contributions, that's why it's legalized. Take advantage of the poor.
Steve, I'm not sure where your first comment was going, but I will note your cynicism, and we'll talk with one of our guests in just a moment about what's going on at the General Assembly. I thank you for the call. Kit's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Kit, you're on the air. Kit, you're on the air.
My deep sympathy to the guest that you have there with her situation, falling prey to the loan bloodsuckers is really can haunt you for the rest of your life. I personally don't have any experience with payday loans. It seems to be a theme with the callers, but one that I did have experience with, I was a full-time student, and I mercifully avoided most of my student loans through the Access UVA scholarship plan.
Yes.
But I wanted to comment on two things. One was that the year I graduated from UVA, 2013, was also the year that they ended the they ended the program that I was under, where people at a certain income level, I am the working poor, did not receive loans and got their needs met by grants. They ended that. And now, no matter how poor you are, you will have loans. And their rationale was the head of the business school excused this as saying, well, once you graduate from UVA, your income levels should all be the same. So we shouldn't burden the more wealthy students with this debt, that we should spread the debt around. And that's simply not the case, because as we've seen, the options to people of lower income are not the same as the options to people of higher income. And when people of higher income borrow money, they seem to get every break in the world. When people of lower income borrow money, they're trapped in this never-ending cycle of repayment with higher interest rates and lower credit. And speaking to credit scores and how they affect lending, I'm gonna wrap up really quick. I could not get credit cards. Mm. When I was in college, everybody wanted to give me a credit card. Everybody in the world.
Yes, yes.
Because I was a student and I was on all their lists. Then once I graduated and I paid off my student loans, because I only had $5,000 left when I graduated, I paid them all off. Nobody was interested. And I thought,
wow.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm 22 years old. I've paid off all my student loans. I made all my payments on time.
Yeah.
Why can't I get a credit card, even at my local bank? They said, well, you haven't built a credit score.
Ah.
They didn't report the tiny loans that I had, because because I scrimped and saved and I used my grants wisely,
yes,
didn't report enough to my credit score to bump it up. So I had to get a secured line of credit where you have to take money, deposit it, and then you can only borrow against that amount of money. So I was told by the local bank, I'm not going to say the name of the bank in case they try something against
me. Sure, I appreciate that.
That stick with it for a year. After a year, if you've made all your payments, we'll bump you up to an unsecured line and we'll raise your credit score, or we'll raise your credit limit.
Right, right.
After a year, I go in and I say, well, I'd like to get an unsecured. And they say, well, it's an application. You have to apply.
Wow. And did you get it?
So we'll apply for it.
Did you get it?
I did not get it. So it took
even
2 years,
even after doing
actually,
the secured credit card.
For them to get off the unsecured.
Wow.
Yeah, it took them 2 years instead of the one. And I found out that the reason why was, again, they had not been reporting. They don't tell you this when you sign up, but not all secured lines of credit report to the three major FICO credit score agencies.
Interesting. Wow. Kent, you're giving us a lot to talk about, and I really appreciate it. I loved that Access UVA program, and I just was made recently aware that program has been discontinued, or I made that assumption. My daughter wanted to contribute to it, and she said it wasn't on the list of options to do. She was shared your being very impressed with that program. So we'll check on that and see if there's another option. But that was a very, very powerful program for people who could not necessarily afford to attend the University of Virginia. I thank you for your call. So Kit's pointing up that there's so much more to this. It is certainly about payday loans. It is certainly about car title loans. But then there's this other level when you go about trying to establish credit and what goes into that process. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Michael's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hey, Kathy. How are you?
Hi. Fine, thanks. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Look, I can really steal the lady, first lady's call. If I don't know if she could get there or not. But the pain, I was in a cycle of payday lending at one time in my life also. And, you know, I recognized at the time that it's not their fault. I mean, of course, they're sharks. No question about it. But in America, in a capitalistic society, you can legally be a shark if you call it by another name, as the gentleman said a couple of calls ago. and people support that. But I had to blame myself for it because basically what it comes down to is that I got in a situation myself.
Uh-huh.
And basically because I didn't have a savings. Now, to say that a person can't save is potentially a false statement because, when I borrowed $500 from the payday loan, I had to pay back $575.
Right.
And until I paid back that $575, I couldn't get the next loan, right? That means that when I had to go in there with the $500 that I owed them plus $75 more to give them, then I could take out another $500. So that $75 that I had to pay them, had I been saving that prior to that for years, I would have had some savings for myself. So really it basically comes down to is that we in America have opportunities to make money in almost any way we want to because of capitalism.
Yeah.
You can't get mad at the shark if he's allowed to be a shark. You have to deal with the fact that he is a shark. And if you want money from the shark, you're going to have to deal with the shark on his terms.
Okay.
So
Michael,
with that in mind, get yourself in a situation where you don't have to deal with the shark.
I hear you.
I mean, it's easier said than done.
I hear you, and what Michael is talking about here is the idea of being smart about money and personally responsible and the like. And yet, I go back to you, Deborah Grant, and I wonder what your take is on what Michael's saying here.
I agree with Michael. Yes, if we had, did better management of our money, we wouldn't have had to go to a payday loan.
Did you feel like you knew enough to be savvy about that? Or do you feel like you knew when you took out that first loan what Michael's talking about the $75 and then this and then that and the other thing?
No, I did not.
Yeah. Michael, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And again, we've posted the website for Bank on Hampton Roads on our Facebook page. Rich Schrager's with us today. He is a professor of law at the University of Virginia. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, Kathy. Nice to be here.
I appreciate it. So there's this Supreme Court case. We alluded to it very briefly toward the top of the show that has to do with a city, most specifically Miami in this case, and its ability to sue over predatory loans. This case now before the Supreme Court?
Yes, it is. They had argument earlier this month in the case.
And what is the case about? What is Miami alleging here?
So Miami is suing the Bank of America and also Wells Fargo on the following theory, which is that they accuse Wells Fargo and Bank of America of issuing predatory mortgage loans. These are loans that have higher interest rates, have more onerous terms, and the claim is that these more onerous loans were made to predominantly Black and Latino customers, residents of Miami, in violation of the Fair Housing Act. The Fair Housing Act makes it illegal to engage in racially discriminatory housing practices, including the issuance of loans on unfavorable terms to Blacks and Latinos. The city claims that they were damaged also by these loans because of the increase in foreclosures that followed the loans, and the city wants to recoup its losses as well.
As you think about the law around this issue, and there are a couple of critical issues, not the least of which is this case at the Supreme Court. There's another case in Virginia that we'll talk about in just a moment. But there's also the regulatory agency that has been designed to deal with this, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And there's some question about whether that will continue with the new administration. It's a five-year-old agency that was established essentially to look at issues like the ones that we are describing. Rich Schreger, I wonder, as you think about that agency and the work that it is doing, is that necessary today? Is it done what it was supposed to do? What's your take on that?
So I think that one of the, as you point out, the purposes of this a new bureau was to try to regulate some of these practices. It's a very young institution, obviously. It's only just gotten off the ground. And we'll have to see whether new President Trump will allow it to continue its work and allow it to pursue these kinds of practices. That is one of the central things that the agency is supposed to do, is try to police these predatory loans.
We're talking with Rich Schreger, who's a professor at the University of Virginia's law school. He's talking a bit about this Supreme Court case with regard to the city of Miami, and we're talking about this this issue quite generally and from a policy perspective. Rich Schreger, as you think about the law around this issue, certainly there have been efforts in Virginia. Some have suggested they have not gone as far as they should. What is your take on the way this issue is being dealt with in state legislatures across the country?
So I think some state legislatures are more attentive to this issue than others. I think cities are particularly attentive to these issues and often are at the forefront of trying to regulate the practices of the loan practices in their jurisdictions. This is why the city of Miami is bringing this lawsuit. The problem often is that cities don't have the power to do this sort of regulation. The state has the power or the federal government has the power. And that means that it's hard for cities to protect their own residents because the state legislature might be more inclined to favor the banks or the lenders. That's not always the case, but it's often the case. And federal law might not be as protective as what a city might want to do.
I wonder about the impact of the Dillon Rule in Virginia on this issue, because the Dillon Rule is essentially, there are only a couple of states that have it, or not every state has it, but the idea is that localities can only do what the state gives them permission to do. So does that, in some cases in Virginia, hamper the ability for cities to really deal with this issue?
Well, I certainly think that's the case in Virginia and other states as well, even states without the official Dillon's Rule. It's often the case that cities and local governments are not permitted to regulate lending practices. And in fact, in many cases, there are federal laws that regulate banks and other lenders, and those laws preempt state and local laws in both. So that means that really the only way to regulate some of these practices is through federal law. Some states can do more, but it's sometimes in conflict with the federal law in certain cases.
Well, Professor Schrager, I certainly appreciate you joining us from UVA to shine a light on this today. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Professor Rich Schrager has also authored a book called City of Power, which talks about how people can act locally to affect global change. And he suggests that that strategy may be put to work around predatory lending. Robert's on the line from Smithfield. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Kathy. Just a quick tip. I hear about these people with all their financial problems, and I grew up in an environment where my father was always borrowing and everything, and they'd come and repossess the car,
okay,
and he couldn't pay for it. Felt really bad. So as I grew up in a young age, I decided to run my own loan business, and it worked out very good. In other words, if I had a savings of $20, I'd borrow it. Whatever the current interest rate is, I would pay it back. Now, you have to have a job to do that. But so far, it has paid off. I don't believe in loans anymore. I take cash for just about everything I buy. And I felt like that practice, that lesson I learned from my father,
sure,
resulted in a lesson, a lifetime lesson. I will starve before I'll spend my last dollar.
Robert, I hear you. And I'll tell you, I think a lot of people have been in this cycle. Deborah Grant, I would imagine you're in this circumstance. If you've been in this cycle, you have great resolve coming out of it not to let it happen again.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're correct.
24 minutes before the hour, Donna's on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Donna. You're on the air.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
I am an accredited financial counselor, and I work with the military.
Uh-huh.
And I also want to say, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Financial Educators Roundtable of Hampton Roads.
Yes.
Good. I've been blessed to be a member of it for almost 20 years. And they are committed to financial education and consumer protection. And a little bit of history here. Before payday loans were allowed in the Commonwealth, the Education Roundtable, along with other groups, fiercely fought it, fought the entrance and the approval. And when the state legislature, the Virginia State Legislature, approved the payday loans, we said this is going to be a wild horse. Nobody is going to be able to.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And the website, by the way, is ferhr.org. Donna, I wonder, since you work with military, I want to ask you specifically about payday loans with regard to military people. I thought there were some special regulations with regard to protections for military members.
There is now. In the past 2 years, there's been a ceiling of 36%. However, they are not supposed to be even patronizing payday lenders. But we don't have control over online payday lenders.
Fair enough.
Or title loans.
Fair enough, Donna. It's a great point. 22 minutes before the hour, Herb's on the line from Hampton. Hi, Herb. You're on the air.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
I didn't realize that you were going to discuss the Consumer Protection Board. I was just going to, advocate for that. They returned something like $11 billion from credit card companies, banks, and payday lenders. That was originally Elizabeth Warren's baby, but the Republicans fought vigorously to not make her the head of that. Still, they were able to do great things, and it's in danger again.
Herb,
so,
just
to advocate for the program. I just wanted to say one more thing, that basically in the roaring 20s, they did a lot of overproduction and the people couldn't buy it. So business was the ones that started this thing of, you could buy on time.
Yes.
That got people in debt. It wasn't the average person who got that
sure. Yeah, Herb, it's a great point, and I thank you for the call. 20 minutes before the hour, and Linda's on the line from York County. Hi, Linda, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
I'm glad you're having this discussion. I wanted to say I have a background in education and law, and one of the major problems that not just poor people, but poor people especially have, is the lack of financial literacy education and teaching. No one basically learns how to budget. They don't learn about the interest rates. They don't understand the fact that banks and loan organizations are in it to make money. So that's why when your first caller said he couldn't pay his loan back, that's because they want you to continue.
Right.
And I think that one of the solutions, we're going to be headed towards a very difficult situation coming up, but one of the solutions is to continue to support organizations like Bank On and some of the organizations that give financial counseling, as well as advocating for teaching financial literacy and budgeting in the schools. Adults, children, all socioeconomic groups really are lacking in this because it's not really taught unless you happen to be exposed to it.
Linda, thank you.
I've worked in the federal government. I've worked in New York.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We do know that there are, in Virginia, to meet the graduation requirements, that you, as I understand it, do have to complete an online course through Virtual Virginia in economics and personal finance. Is that your understanding, Deborah?
Yes. That's just started this year.
That was sort of a personal finance SOL or standard of learning.
And
that was developed with the support of the Virginia Bankers Association Ed Fund and the Virginia 529 College Plan. So that course is available at no cost to all Virginia public schools through Virtual Virginia. We're glad to have Jay Spear with us today, who's the executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center. He concentrates on consumer law. Jay Spear, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
I'm wondering, as you think about this issue from a Virginia perspective, I know that your organization is fighting cases on this and doing a lot of that at no cost because you've been so inspired to make a difference here. Tell us what you have going on.
Well, we, for many years now, probably about 6 or 7 years, we've had what we call a payday loan hotline where people call us that are in trouble with payday loans and car title loans, and then we give them free legal advice and try to help people get out of the loans. So we've talked to literally hundreds and hundreds of people that have been caught up in these loans, and that's where we – and we've also – we fight the policy battles. You had an earlier caller talk about when Virginia allowed payday lending in 2002, a lot of people were fighting that, and we were one of those groups.
Right. So, as you look at the issue in Virginia, where do you see the greatest challenge? I know the Attorney General's office has recently revamped itself and put some more consumer protections in place, really expanded the office and sort of reorganized it with one particular focus on predatory lending. What do you think needs to be done?
Well, specifically in Virginia, and this is I'm actually at a meeting today with people all around the country that work on these issues in their states. And it's a little bit different in every state, but there's sort of general themes. And the first thing to think about it, the fact is that the public doesn't want this stuff. The public does not approve of loans for more than 36%. And to give you an example, in Montana, they recently passed a referendum with 75% of the people voting in favor of a 36% interest rate cap. And yet, at the same time that the overwhelming public does not like this stuff, the policymakers allow it to happen, starting with, in Virginia, the Payday Loan Act in 2002. And so you may ask yourself, why is that?
Yes.
And you look at it's the lobbyists. The lobbyists for the industry convinced the legislators that this is okay, and we allow our legislators to get away with not doing with what we want. Now, Virginia has some very specific problems in that we have payday lending. We allow payday lending. We let them charge over 200-some% interest. And we put some restrictions on them, and then they shift to another model. We currently have a lot of lenders that used to be payday lenders doing what's called line of credit loans because those loans are not regulated, and we've tried now for years to get those loans put under regulation, just like payday loans and car title loans, but we can't get anywhere. The legislators won't pass it. So we have a problem with, you know, some of the loans are allowed to be unregulated. We have the internet loans, which somebody mentioned earlier.
Yes.
They are a big problem. We feel that they are against the law right now, but for the most part, that law is not being enforced by our regulator. So
wow.
That's sort of allowed to continue. There's probably going to be a bill in the General Assembly this year to open us up to even more internet lending, which would be a very bad mistake.
And I guess you all are organizing against that.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
And, you know, the internet lending is particularly dangerous because they grab your information when you apply for these loans. They get your Social Security number and your bank account, and then they sell your information to all sorts of scammers and other people who mess up your credit and talk people into scams and take money out of their bank accounts. It's pretty bad.
Wow. Title loan companies reportedly donated about $400,000 to Virginia representatives last year to that point that Jay Speer is making. He's executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center. Jay, what services or what opportunities do you have for people who may be hearing this show and think, wow, I'm being targeted here. I'm having a tough time here. I have an issue here. What resources do you have available?
Well, I would suggest that they call our hotline. I'll give you the number. It's 866-830-4551. If you call our hotline, we will talk to you and see how we can help you. We'll give you free legal advice, won't cost you anything. A lot of people were able to get them out of the loans for one way or another, or else at least give you some sort of advice to, you know, direct you with another alternative. But, you know, I think what a lot of people need to understand that there's a big difference between lending and loan sharking.
Uh-huh.
And it's one thing to make somebody a loan with the understanding that you want them to pay back the loan. It's another thing to do a loan sharking, which is basically the practice of getting somebody into a debt trap, and you don't really want them to pay it back. You want them to just keep paying forever.
Well, I don't know if you heard this this conversation earlier in the program. It's really quite shocking. There was a man who went in and got a loan for his business to buy equipment for his business. He goes in to pay it off. I think he said it was 30-some percent interest. He goes in, or 29% interest. He goes in to pay it off, and they say, oh, no, we don't want you to pay it off. We'd like you to take out another one.
Right. Well, that's exactly the way the payday loans, the internet loans, the car title loans, it's exactly the way they're set up. They want it that way. They don't usually tell you that outright. That was a more honest loan shark than most. But car title loans in Virginia are very much, they're a disaster. We have, if they have to report certain statistics to the State Corporation Commission, and last year statistics were that 25% of the loans were 60 days behind. I mean, this is just, and you compare that to a more traditional loan, like a loan you might get to buy a car, which is less than 1% would be 66 days behind. They have 25% behind.
Wow. You know, I want to ask you as well, Jay, Deborah Grant, who remains with us in the studio, was telling us that she got a quote-unquote payday loan. And I asked her, because I didn't know, you know, what kind of work do you do, thinking payday means work, you know, a paycheck for work in an employed scenario. And she says she doesn't work. And please, Deborah Grant, if I'm wrong, correct me, because you're disabled. So she gets a disability check of some sort. So that is what they attached. Is that just struck me as, I don't know, I was very intrigued by that, because I thought payday meant that you had to have a job, you know, where you weren't relying on sort of very basic safety net kind of benefits.
No, absolutely not. In fact, the people on Social Security are their best customers. And when the law first passed in Virginia, the payday loan law passed, what they would do is they would make you a one-month loan, and then they would flip you over the next month. And we had lots of people that are in the loan for 2 or 3 years. We had one lady whose case went to the Virginia Supreme Court had flipped the loan 36 times straight, and she'd paid maybe $4,000 or $5,000 for a $500 loan. And they love people on Social Security because once they get in the loan, they can't get out. They don't usually get any extra income like working overtime or a tax refund or something like that. So they can keep you in it. So that's often their best customer.
Well, Jay Spear, we appreciate your being with us today. We'll look for the legislation and the policy changes that may be presented in the General Assembly session, which will get underway in January. I want to ask you very quickly. We had a caller ask about this, and there's some reporting on this nationally about because, of course, that's the question everybody's asking right now. What changes when a new presidential administration takes over in January? What are you and your colleagues hearing about the future of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau?
Well, there is a lot of conversation that they are going to try to get rid of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. What they will more likely do is to try to pass a lot of legislation that weakens them, and which has the same effect. But this, again, is very much contrary to what people want. People do not want the only agency out there that held Wells Fargo responsible for what they did to their customers, and then that is, as one of your other callers said, has gotten billions of dollars back for consumers from payday lenders and all sorts of other scam artists that take money from people. But yet the legislators think they can get away with that, and I hope people will hold them accountable and say no. No matter what who you voted for or your political opinions, you should definitely be opposed to that.
Jay Spear, I want to thank you for joining us today from the Virginia Poverty Law Center. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. Deborah Grant, I want to thank you for being with us as well today. And thank you for telling your story and for the work you're doing with Virginia Organizing.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much.
Can learn more, by the way, about Virginia Organizing, which is an organization oriented around the needs of poor people and people of the working poor, virginia-organizing.org. The hotline for the Virginia Poverty Law Center is 866-830-4551. We'll put that on our Facebook page. As well, we want to let you know that the Attorney General's office, Attorney General Mark Herring, has massively reorganized the consumer protection section of that office, and they've added staff. They've essentially doubled the number of attorneys in the section, and really are focusing on this issue of consumer protection, particularly around the issue of predatory lending. So if you want to talk to them, they have also set up a database where you can log on and find out company names, industries, or complaint topics within specific geographic areas, so you'll sort of know who you're dealing with. You can learn more about that at ag.virginia.gov/consumer-protection. We'll be back in just a moment. We're coming up on 7 minutes before the hour this weekend, Sunday, at the Founders Inn in Virginia Beach. There'll be a marvelous event called the Gold Star Family Holiday Banquet. It is part of the Honor and Remember organization. George Lutz with us today, the founder and executive director thereof. Mr. Lutz, good to have you with us today. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon. Appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. I know you. Your son Tony was killed in Iraq in 2005, and that really inspired this organization and this mission for you. I am so sorry about his death, and I wonder what it was about that experience that caused you to think that this organization had work to do.
Well. Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it. But, you know, as part of the grieving process, this is going on 11 years now.
Yes.
But as part of that grieving process, you know, as a dad, I just wanted to know that America cared. You know, I wanted to be shown in some way something that I could embrace that let me know that he didn't die in vain. You know, that his life had a purpose and that people appreciated it.
And one of the things you point out is that there is so much that happens in the immediate wake of a service death. And, you know, there's a lot of activity around that. But then you get months and years out, and it's a different story.
Correct. And I kind of went on this search for healing, you know, on my own journey and really found very little. You know, I find that as a nation, we do a great job remembering our active duty military, our wounded, and our veteran community. But when it comes to those who gave their lives, they're kind of gone and out of sight, out of mind. But there's a whole plethora, I mean, a family unit that numbers in the thousands, tens of thousands, that are still here grieving, and nobody really knows it.
And so that's part of what this event is designed to do, is to honor that sacrifice, honor those families. And the event is a holiday banquet for Gold Star families, Sunday, December 4th. And I know that not just Gold Star families, but others can certainly attend and can certainly be part of supporting it.
Correct. As part of the Honor Remember organization, we wanted to do more than just publicly recognize and appreciate the families. We wanted to remember them individually. And so 7 years ago, this is our seventh annual, we decided to have a free evening where Gold Star families could come together and be in a safe place and during a time of year that's most difficult, and just meet each other, enjoy each other's company, share stories, and bring the public in as well to say, hey, here's some of your hero families. You know, talk to them, hear their stories, appreciate them, and be grateful that their loved ones gave their lives for their country so that yours didn't have to.
So what is this time of year? You know, it's a very family-oriented time of year. What is that like for you and for others who have lost a son, lost a husband, lost a daughter, lost a wife? What is that like?
Yeah. I'll explain it in this way. You've probably heard on other stations, other things that you read, you've probably said it yourself. We're always praying for those whose loved ones are away on the holidays, right? You hear this family is not going to have their husband or their son or whatever in the holidays. Well, flip that, you know, around a little bit and think that these families will never have their their loved one at their table again.
Sure.
Yeah. That's the difference.
It's powerful.
You know, it's final, and it's something that we always try to fix things, you know, in our day to day, but this is one thing you just can't fix. They'll never be home again. And that's a powerful thing for each one of those families, regardless of the generation.
Sure.
You know, we have families that come to the banquet from World War II and from Vietnam and from eras, you know, in the past, who are still remembering their spouses or their brothers or their, you know, their siblings or what, their parents.
Sure. George Lutz, I want to thank you so much for talking about that. I know that is hard to do, and I particularly want to underscore that the Lutzes lost their son in 2005. So you just heard sort of a sense of what this time of year and what every acknowledgement of that means for families whose loved ones have been killed in the line of duty. The Honor and Remember event is coming up Sunday, December 4th at the Founders Inn in Virginia Beach. It will be from 4 to 8 p.m. And Mr. Lutz, where can people learn more if they're interested either in sponsoring or attending?
Sure. The easiest way now is to just go straight to the website, honorandremember.org, all spelled out.
Yeah.
Honorandremember.org. Actually, I'll give you a number because tomorrow morning is our cutoff date for headcount.
All right. Give us that number in the next 10 seconds.
504-4722.
Mr. Lutz, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you for underscoring that for us, that loss, and what it continues to mean. And thank you for raising our sensitivity about that, for all the good work that you're doing with Honor and Remember. Thank you very much.
All right. God bless you for the opportunity.
Take care. George Lutz is the founder and executive director of Honor and Remember Incorporated. His son, Tony, was killed in Iraq in 2005. He's on Twitter at @HonorRemember. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.